This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
For those of you who don't know me, I'm a radiation oncologist. I've been here for 33 years. I remember the days when we didn't have a spore and we didn't have a huge prostate program, but we started out with the leadership of Peter, Carol, and Eric to build a basic program. And then we contributed our piece with the radiation for prostate cancer interest. And most of the work that I do has been involved with the radiation therapy oncology group. And we've done large clinical trials on prostate cancer. There was a question earlier today about what to do about recurrences, and I'll come to that specifically related to radiation recurrences. But today what I'm going to focus on is, let me see if this thing works. I'm going to focus on this topic. I'm going to talk about some of the definition of recurrence after radical prostatectomy and what to do about it. We use these terms called adjuvant, and we use a term called salvage. Salvage is not a very good word, but it's the word that's in the literature, so I'll stick with it. Adjuvant means that you render the treatment before there's any evidence that there's a recurrence. So sometimes when you look at the pathology, you say, you know, this looks like this is aggressive. I'm not going to wait for the PSA to go up. I'm going to recommend treatment now. And salvage means you wait until the PSA goes up and then you administer the treatment. And then I'm going to talk about recurrences after radiation. This whole topic of prostate cancer and recurrences is something that's not well understood. This is from an article that was published in the Atlanta Journal Constitution. I can't read it from here. This is an old thing about how Arnold Palmer, who has successfully underwent a radical prostatectomy, was going to need radiation. And we see this a lot. It doesn't mean that he did the wrong thing by having the surgery, but it's just that when you go for surgery, sometimes I'm surprised that the patient comes to see me and the patient has an expression like, well, I don't know why I'm here. I've had a radical prostatectomy. The cancer is gone. Well, why am I here? And I explain to them that that it's not uncommon for men to need to get another treatment, that it still might be the best treatment for them to have had the surgery first in some cases. And that we can still render him cured and disease-free. I just want to make a point about, well, who are these people that tend to have these recurrences? And what you can see is that it's the patients that have the higher Gleason scores. There's a study from the Mayo Clinic looking at 1,688 men. They only focused on men with Gleason 7s. And if they had a Gleason 4+3 on their pathology report at 10 years, about 60% of them, their PSA was rising. So that means they weren't cured. You also have studies, this is looking at, again, radical prostatectomy in patients with intermediate risk disease, in patients that had more than 50% of their cores positive, they had a high recurrence rate. This is data from University of Pennsylvania and data from Harvard. One is a developmental set and the other is a validation set. So having a lot of positive biopsies, especially if it's intermediate risk, typically meaning the Gleason score is 7 or more, those patients have a high risk of recurrence within 5 years. Patients with high-grade pathology. This is another series from the Mayo Clinic. If you took patients, these are patients that had pathologically confined disease, meaning they took the prostate out, they dipped it in ink, they sliced it up, and they looked at whether the cancer was up against the ink or not. And if it's up against the ink, they call that a positive margin. If it's not, it's a negative margin. These patients were believed to have everything excised. And I recently had a call from a gentleman who had a radical prostatectomy in Southern California, and he said, but the doctor told me he got it all. Well, the biology is going to talk to you. And the biology says that if the Gleason score is in this study 8, 9, by 5 years, 50% or more of the men had recurrences. So high-grade tumors, it's about the biology. It's not whether you think you got it all based on the specimen, and that's not enough. Patients with seminal vesicle involvement, 71% in this study, and these are the citations, 71% of these patients had a recurrence within 10 years. Now, what is the definition of a recurrence after radical prostatectomy? This is a very old slide. It was a moving target before the early 1990s, where we didn't people didn't use PSA at all. It was believed that the local control rate with radical prostatectomy and radiation was in the 80 to 90% ballpark because all we were using was the rectal exam. In the early 1990s, the PSA assay became available, and some of the early papers said, oh, 0.6. would be a good threshold. And then another paper, 0.4, and Hopkins, 0.2. And early on, we use this at one point, 0.1. And if you use an ultra-sensitive assay, you can pick it up earlier. So what number should we use? Well, if you use the 0.2, okay, then you have more failures at 10 years. If you use the point greater than 0.5, you have fewer failures. So it's a matter of, do you want sensitivity, specificity? Do you want to know it earlier so you can offer what we call salvage treatment or not? So there's no gold standard. In my practice, if I see a patient that has a rising PSA, I don't care what the value is. If it's 0.01 and then it goes to 0.05 and then it goes to 0.09, the standard is greater than 0.2. I don't feel compelled to wait until that threshold is reached before I offer treatment, because if it swims like a fish and it's smelling like a fish and it tastes like a fish, it's a fish. And that PSA is going up, is going up. Now, sometimes there is a paper that looks at a series of patients who underwent radical prostatectomy and had detectable PSAs at the end of the prostatectomy. And these patients went 10 years and never had any evidence of progression. Those are people that had very low PSAs, like 0.03 or 0.01, and their PSA was stable. And that's probably a reflection of benign glands at the end, at the part of the surgical specimen. So when the prostate's removed, if during the removal process is a little bit of glands, of normal glands that are left in the bed, they can produce a little bit of PSA. And so there are people that will have a detectable PSA in whom I won't recommend radiation if their PSA is stable and very low, and it's been that way for a while. But if that PSA is on the move, then I believe in intervention. Now, years ago, the first study that was done by the Southwest Oncology Group. And I'm glad that Dr. Small gave you all a quick education on looking at curves, so that you'll understand that what this curve is telling you. These are the blue adjuvant RT means that these patients had radical prostatectomies, and then if they were all cured with the treatment, it would go straight across. The patients that got immediate radiation are this curve, and the patients that they didn't get immediate radiation are this curve. And this suggested that radiation, early radiation, was associated with a survival advantage. But there were other studies. For example, this is a larger study from Europe done by the so-called EORTC, where you don't even need to be able to read the labels. These curves look very much alike, and this was a bigger study. There were differences in the study design. For example, when people recurred, the patients that got the salvage radiation got more aggressive radiation, they got higher dose, they got hormone therapy and so forth. But the fact of the matter is that the controversy persisted about whether you should get hormone therapy early, we call that adjuvant, or whether you should get salvage radiation. And so there were three studies that were done. These are listed on this slide. One is called Radicals, one is called RAVES, one is called the Good Digitic 17 study. And these studies, not only were they were all published in one issue of the Lancet Oncology. And so they published these three studies together, and then they published what's called a meta-analysis, where they combined the three of them together. And so they sort of threw the gauntlet down, and they said, basically, patients should all wait until the PSA goes up, and then we offer salvage radiation. And there's a little bit of truth in that, but there are problems with that because you have to understand the nature of the studies. First of all, the patients that were eligible for this study could have any one of any of these. They could have a Gleason score of 7. I've never offered adjuvant radiotherapy to somebody only because they had a Gleason score of 7 or because their pre-op PSA was greater than 10. So the selection of the patients for these studies was a little bit problematic. And I won't go into the details, but there are issues with the PSA thresholds that they use. You could actually, in theory, have a patient who was on the immediate adjuvant arm who had a lower PSA than the person on the salvage arm. But anyway, there were problematic issues with the design. And in two of the studies were stopped by the Data Safety Monitoring Committee. So when you design a study, you have to tell the committee, this is the event rate. This is what I expect to happen over the next few years. And that tells you how many patients you need in the study and when you're going to analyze the data. And so in these two studies that were stopped by the data monitoring committees, originally they promised to show a 74% control versus 64 and a 70 versus 60, but the patients that they actually enrolled were far more favorable than what they promised. And so the data monitoring committee said, no, this is a waste of time. You need to stop the study now, because you're not having enough failures to be able to prove the benefit of immediate treatment versus delayed treatment. And basically what they did, and this is, I'm going to shorten this, is that they had 85% of the patients in the study had a low Gleason score that's 7 or less. 67% of the patients had positive margins. Positive margins are associated with a higher success rate when you do salvage radiation. So that's a potential bias. And 81% had negative, did not have seminal vesicles. The PSAs were very low. So these are very favorable patients. So the bottom line is that, and I'm going to, in the interest of time to catch up, if a patient has a radical prostatectomy and they have very favorable pathology, meaning they don't have seminal vesicle involvement, they obviously don't have lymph node involvement, and they don't have a real high-grade tumor, then I would argue that these studies taken together suggest that it's safe to wait for the PSA to come up. But what we don't know is that if a patient has seminal vesicle involvement and a Gleason 9, whether it's safe to wait for the PSA to come up. So it remains a potential research study. The other thing is that there were other issues with these studies in terms of how they did the radiation, which is a problem that I'm just going to touch on very briefly. This is from a study that we did in the radiation therapy oncology group. We took three groups of we randomized patients between three groups. Group one had radiation only to the prostate bed area after the radical prostatectomy, and they had a rising PSA. Group two, they got short-term hormone therapy, 4 months or 6 months of hormone therapy with the radiation. And group three is we treated the pelvic lymph nodes in addition to that. And this study shows that when you treat high-risk patients who are recurring after radical prostatectomy, that it's useful to treat the pelvic lymph nodes to reduce the risk of recurrence. And I see this frequently. What happens is that historically, before we had the availability of PSMA PET in the community, the patient would have a radical prostatectomy and the radiation oncologist would just radiate where the prostate used to be. And I'm like, you got to give hormones and you got to treat the pelvis. And now this is a recent study that's validated that practice, which we've had for a long time at UCSF. Now, one of the things that I love about working at UCSF, I turned down at least three chair jobs at other institutions. And I turned it down because I didn't want to leave the team that I was on. When you're on a team and you like to win, then you got a good center, you got forwards and guards. You don't want to go to a second rate team just so you can, you know, make a little bit more money. And this is a classic example of how work done in the Department of Urology guided how I manage my patients. So this is a paper published in 1996. These are patients who underwent radical prostatectomy. There's 114 patients. They did 156 biopsies. And they found that in this study, about 50% of the patients had positive biopsies where the prostate used to be. So we developed many years ago, we pioneered this at UCSF. Patients in the community used to come to UCSF specifically for post-op radiation because I would say to them, well, when you're going for your radiation after your recurrence from prostatectomy, do they put these things in? These are two gold seeds. They're a gold seed here and a gold seed here. This is a patient that came in with a PSA of 0.4 after a radical prostatectomy. And I sent him to Dr. Shinohara. He put these seeds in there. And this is now more than 20 years ago. And we would line these seeds up every day to make sure we hit the right spot. And this is an example of how our imaging used to look 20 years ago. And so there were supposed to be these two seeds here. So the therapist called me up and said, Dr. Roach, I thought you said there were some seeds in there. And I go, yeah, there are. I said, move the field back 5 millimeters. So they moved the field back, and now you can see the seeds there. So at the end of his treatment, I put on a very small field just to boost that nodule and gave additional dose. Now, if you looked in his chart, you say, wow, this man got this tremendous dose. He had no toxicity. His PSA became undetectable. And so our standard of care at UCSF for years has been in men who undergo radical prostatectomy, who have a recurrence, if we do nothing else, we're going to hit the anastomosis. We're going to hit where the prostate used to be. Because if you go back to that data from 1996 that said, where are these recurrences? They're at the anastomosis. And now we know that the two most common places are the anastomosis and the pelvic lymph nodes. And that's what the study showed. And that's what we've been believing and dealing with for years. This just shows that if you don't use the gold seeds, 40% of the time you're off by more than 5 millimeters. And when you're off by more than 5 millimeters, it means you're potentially missing the cancer that's recurred or persistent, and you're hitting something else. That means you're hitting rectum or bladder or penis or whatever. So the bottom line is we like to accurately treat patients. Nowadays, we have a PSMA PET, and this is a recent nomogram that predicts, you know, what is going to be your success rate if you add PSMA PET into the mix. And one of the things that I'd like to talk about, the dose, you need to give, I use 70 gray. But when you use this, you got to give enough dose for recurrences, and you need to add hormone therapy to reduce the risk of recurrences. So I won't dwell on this, but you can define which patients are likely to do well and which ones are not, and you need to be more aggressive in some than others. Now, I'm gonna shift to talk about recurrences after radiation. So this is a paper that we wrote long time ago, 2006. It used to be that the so-called ASTRO definition was used to predict, to define recurrences, which meant three consecutive rises in the PSA. But in this paper, we recommended a different definition that we called the Phoenix definition for several reasons. One, the consensus conference was held in Phoenix, Arizona. And two, we talk about the Phoenix arising from the ashes. So this PSA going up, and we're going to do something about it. And what we showed is that the Phoenix definition is a better definition. It's more robust. It has some statistical advantages to it and so forth. So this definition is basically two above the nadir, the nadir, N-A-D-I-R, which is the lowest value you get after radiation. If it goes up by more than 2.0, then that's a recurrence. Now, if you read the paper, I say in the paper, you don't have to wait for that, though. If you have a young patient who's been on hormones and radiation and their PSA is 0.1 or 0.2 or something like that, and it starts to go up, you don't have to say, well, I'm going to wait till it goes up by 2.0. You can start looking. You can do MRIs. You can do PETs. You can do biopsies if it's, you know, a few years after the treatment. And in some of those patients, we offer additional treatment. And one of the things I just thought I'd mention is that when we talk about recurrences, the question is, well, what about preventing their recurrence in the first place? And this is from a study that we did, a large phase 3 trial comparing high dose 79 gray versus 70 gray RTOG0126. And what you can see is that the patients that were treated with lower doses have a higher likelihood of having a recurrence. So one way to reduce the risk of recurrence is to give higher doses of radiation. And we've been using higher doses of radiation to treat prostate cancer than most people in the world. And another way, in addition to external beam radiation, is to do brachytherapy. This is a randomized trial that was done in Canada called the ASCEND-RT, which showed that adding brachytherapy on top of external beam radiation substantially improved the control rate. And so if you look at those that had brachytherapy with the external beam versus external beam alone, there was a clear difference in biochemical control. And so we pretty much abandoned conventional external beam radiation many years ago. We either did brachy as a boost, or now I tend to do a stereotactic body radiotherapy as a boost. Well, we do both at UCSF. Now, when you come back to the issue of the definition, so this is what happens when you use, this is with low dose rate brachytherapy. When we do these high doses of radiation, we can use a more rigorous endpoint as opposed to using the nadir plus two. Now here, there's not much difference, but if you look in those people that get the external beam radiation, even the dose escalated external beam radiation, there's a big difference between requiring a PSA greater than 0.2 versus a rise of 2. So this is a more rigorous definition. And as long as, and so you really should not compare head-to-head surgery versus radiation using different definitions of biochemical control, because the patients that are treated with radiation still have a prostate, and the prostate can continue to make some PSA. And so there are issues with the comparison between the two. And this is a study done by the group from Hopkins showing, well, what if you took the surgical patients and you used a definition like we use, then our control rates would be better. And I basically agree with the paper. So I don't tend to compare these studies side by side using those endpoints. This is a busy slide. I know you cannot read the slide. But the reason that I have the slide here is that one of the most common myths that I hear patients come to me with, they say, well, if I have surgery, then I can have radiation afterwards. But if I have radiation, I can't have surgery afterwards. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You know, everybody has a right to their own opinion, but not their own facts. This is a systematic review and meta-analysis of local salvage therapies after radical radiotherapy. And what you can see here, what you can't see here, is that if you look at radical prostatectomy as a treatment after radiation, 52 studies. If you look at cryo after radiation, 32 studies. If you look at HIFU, 20 studies. If you look at SBRT, re-irradiation, 8 studies, HDR, 16 studies, and LDR, brachytherapy, 32 studies. So there's a plethora of data that shows that you do have treatment options despite recurrences after radiation. This is from our data from UCSF looking at HDR brachytherapy salvage in people who recur after radiation. These are respectable results with reasonable toxicity in these patients. This is another paper. This is LDR brachytherapy. This is a study. The first author was a urology resident, and we were in the operating room one day doing brachytherapy. And I said, you know, we have pretty good results with brachytherapy after external beam radiation. Why don't you take our data and analyze it and write a paper? So he did. And this showed, these are early results showing these are selected patients where we did LDR brachytherapy in patients who had recurrences after radiation. So it does work. And then we actually did a trial in the RTOG called RTOG0526. This is a multi-institutional salvage brachytherapy study after external beam radiation. And these results are very respectable. The toxicity was mild, modest at best, and well tolerated. So there are plenty of options after radiation. Now I'm getting to the end. This is an example of a patient who has recurrent or persistent disease after radiation, but not localized to the prostate. This is a patient that I put on a trial called RTOGO126. He was treated now over 20 years ago. And his PSA was 10, his Gleason score was 6. He got radiated and his PSA never really went down as much as I expected it to do. And so I subsequently did biopsies and MRIs, and we didn't have PSMA PET then. Eventually we found a nodule above the seminal vesicles, and we had a biopsy, and that nodule showed a Gleason 4+4 in this nodule, presumably a node that he relapsed in. And the issue was that when he breathed, his nodule, it moved up and down. So how are we going to treat that thing safely in a patient who's been previously radiated? So I had my good friend, Dr. Shinohara, put a fiducial marker in it. There's a gold seed in this thing. And I gave him hormone therapy, treated the pelvic lymph nodes, boosted that nodule, and treated the other nodes. And he's actually out more than 10 years with a normal testosterone. PSA is very low. He appears to be disease-free. And this is just an example of how you can treat persistent disease with radiation outside the prostate area. So recurrences happen. Here are the facts. Continued follow-up is important. Salvage treatment is appropriate in many patients who have a recurrence or who may have a recurrence after prostatectomy. You can wait for the PSA to come up. There are probably some patients that would benefit from adjuvant treatment, the very high-risk patients. PSMA PET has allowed us to do a more tailored approach, we can offer salvage treatment after radiation. Thank you very much for your attention.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.